Hello, dumplings. Welcome to Let's Get Ugly, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest beauty, wellness, and lifestyle issues that aren't always pretty, but always real. We're your co-hosts, Trishna and Disha, the sister duo keeping it 100% authentic, super sassy, and really silly at the same time. We're so excited to introduce you to new industry insiders who are going to break down a variety of topics. These are real experts that have amazing insights. Today, we're so pleased to introduce you to the founder of the Intimacy Curator, Eileen Sigeti.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. Select almost any one item for 50% off, and then Adam and Eve loads on the free stuff. Enter offer code UGLY at checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts. A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy, and 6 free spicy movies, plus free shipping. That's UGLY, UGLY. Offer code UGLY at checkout at adamandeve.com.
Your journey has been super interesting, and we're really excited to have you here. What pushed you to move to India over 15 years ago?
I think madness is what drew me to India. I came in 2000 as a backpacker, and I just fell in love with the country. I came back to UK, and then I started feeling like very sad and depressed, and I missed it. So I used to visit Southall once a week, go to the temple, have Indian food, buy sweets, then watch a lot of Bollywood movies. And then I finally decided, like, okay, there's no point living this Indian life in the UK, so might as well move. And then I moved, I studied Hindi, and then I moved in 2007 to live here.
Wow, that's so exciting. So you watched a lot of movies in particular. Which one was your favorite?
So my favorite movie is Satyam Shivan Sundaram. It's a very, it's sort of old. It's a Raj Kapoor movie where there is a woman who gets, as a kid, gets burnt, or half of her face gets burnt, and then she manages to get married, but the husband doesn't know that she has half burnt face, and then there is the usual drama, and she runs away. So it's about beauty within, like beauty within.
That's really, really amazing and interesting to touch on the fact of beauty within, which I'm sure we'll talk about a lot when we get into your line of work. But speaking of that, I mean, you kind of started in the consumer research area before moving into intimacy coaching. What inspired that shift, and how do you kind of leverage those experiences that you've had with your previous clients like Tinder and Bumble in your current practice?
Yeah, so working for consumer research or brand strategy makes you talk to people a lot, especially about sex, intimacy, romance. It can get very personal and deep. So I really enjoyed that when I was doing it. I didn't like so much giving strategy to brands for them to sell stuff to people. But I really loved talking about dating and relationships. And what people were looking for. Obviously, when I was working with the brands, they had just entered India. So it was pretty new. Everybody was ashamed of being on a dating app. It was sort of like an app that you would hide on your phone. Like, you would not show people that you had a Tinder on your phone or you were looking out. So the dating scene has changed a lot. Now everyone is on a dating app. But yeah, I realized that it was something I really loved doing, and I was interested in understanding what were the challenges of people, like if there was anything I could do to help across these like big transitions that people are facing currently in the dating world, in the relationship world, in the gender war worlds also.
Wow. I think that's so interesting as well, like especially when you touch on gender. I'd love to know a little bit more because I feel like we're in such breakthrough stages specifically with India, aren't we? Like we're in a position where we have this kind of like moment of people being able to really engage with the concept of dating. And now we're throwing in like a new spanner into the works, which is gender. And we already know India is progressing, but it's taking a moment to get there. How do you feel you kind of perceive that?
I think, I mean, that's the thing with India. There are parallel worlds. And if we talk about urban English speaking Indians, probably middle class, they are almost like, they are like their global counterparts. So their understanding of dating is very similar to what we have globally. Then you have the other Indias, you know, you have people who don't even have access to internet. So therefore, dating in smaller towns or in villages is not even, doesn't even exist. It has to be hidden. People don't really want to others to know that they are seeing someone or they're in love with someone or there is a romance, because marriage is what it will happen eventually, and probably it's going to be an arranged marriage. So it's there are, I'm obviously, there are gender roles, and they are quite strict in those in smaller cities and villages, but in the cities is changing. So there is much more conversation around it. There's been a legislation change as well. So yeah, I mean, Gen Z is a bit more aware, and gender roles are sort of changing and transforming. So when they date, they're much more open to new experiences, or seeing individuals or themselves as humans first and then gender comes later. While more traditional setups will have, okay, there's a woman dating a man, is more like heterosexual, cisgender heterosexual kind of behaviors, and this is what a woman is supposed, this is how she's gonna behave, and this is how a man is gonna behave. Now in the dating world, because we are transitioning, like for example, millennials or older people who probably have been married, have divorced or separated, they are still figuring out what is going on, because who pays for a date? Whose responsibility is that? Now that women are financially independent, this has changed a lot. So in the dating world, there's a lot of confusion. So I think it's going to take about maybe another like decade or so for things to stabilize. Yeah, I mean, people are finding it difficult to find others or like to connect with or like to have long-term relationships. There are hookups. Obviously, a lot of people are okay with hookups. Mostly, and I'm saying like mainstream, mostly it's men. But there are women who are also opening up to this idea of, you know, just having a casual encounter or casual sex or casual relationship and maybe even a one-night stand. But again, there is no sex education, and therefore a lot of people don't even know what happens. How do you contract an STI? What are STI? So yeah, there needs to be, there's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it kind of brings me on to education, because that is effectively what you do. You're all about training and educating people and being able to understand the concept of intimacy, sexuality, and creating healthy balances. And what we noticed is that you have a very, very interesting method called the Somatica method. And what I would love to know is, could you please explain it to us and just kind of talk about how it differs from traditional talk therapy?
Yeah, so Somatica, the Somatica method was the, has been developed in LA by two ladies who run Somatica Institute. It's based on somatic psychology. So you pay more attention to what is going on in your body instead of just like talking. So what are the sensations in your body when you experience an emotion, for example, especially when you date or you are getting physically intimate? There are a lot of sensations in the body that you might not be aware of. So the method helps you be more in touch with what is going on in your body. So it can help you when you're dating. I have anxiety and therefore I go on a date and I'm shaking, or I don't know how to calm down and therefore I won't be able to speak. So through this method, you learn breathing exercises, you understand what to do to regulate your emotions when you are in a stressful situation. And obviously you use, you talk, you communicate also, being vulnerable and talk about your anxiety. If you are in an intimate scenario, you might have experienced sexual trauma, which is very, very common across the globe, in India as well. And therefore, you struggle being able to touch or to be touched. So the Somatica method kind of helps you ease into it because it's a touch-based method where you can experience it with a coach. The coach will help you maybe hold a hand or initiate holding hands, maybe hug, maybe even come up with more arousing energy. Like, for example, there are people who don't experience arousal or are not really sure what to do after they experience arousal because there is no education. Again, many people have not had a physical intimacy experiences even in their 30s or their 40s. And they feel that they've been left behind. So therefore, they would come. We have a session where we talk about how to make the first move, or how to touch someone, what are the kind of touches that they enjoy. And there is ongoing practice. So it's like, it's almost like teaching someone to cook or teaching someone to bicycle, like to cycle on a bicycle. And you need to move your body to do these things. Or like, for example, if you're learning to dance, you need to see and experience dance. You can't just watch something online. Like you can reach a certain point when you watch something, a video, or if you talk about it, you can talk about dancing, but that will not teach you how to dance. So that will not teach you how to cook. So Somatica method helps people to practice what they're learning around intimacy, practice what they're learning about, for example, making the first move, or even in sexual trauma, like how to ease into physical intimacy slowly with someone who's trained, instead of like jumping into a real life situation and then probably having a panic attack or running and not being able to connect with a potential partner.
Oh, I think that you've touched on something really interesting there that I think a lot of people don't realize, but that's kind of those differences between sex and intimacy, because obviously there are a lot of different things involved within that. For kind of explaining that to the everyday person, what would you say those key differences would be?
So intimacy means getting close or connecting with someone, and it can happen at multiple levels. It can happen at a physical level, but it doesn't require, like, it doesn't need to be sex. You can be physically intimate with someone and experience maybe touch or maybe kissing or hugging. Okay, it could be just like a feather touch or just touching of the body. Even giving each other massages is an act of physical intimacy. When we talk about sex, and not necessarily all the time, but usually we talk about genitals. But sex for many is also non-genital based. So you can have, again, like it's, you can almost say, okay, it's intimacy, but it's sexual or platonic. So you can have physical intimacy that is platonic, and you can have physical intimacy that is sexual without genitals. So when we talk about sex, usually we apply multiple senses to it. Like it's the brain, all your senses, like your touch, your smell, your taste, and a narrative. So you engage all these senses as well as your brain and the narrative that you want to create. And often you would engage genitals, but not everyone, not for everyone, because you might have kinky people who understand that maybe a flogging session or a bondage session is sex. Some might say that no, it's just like physical intimacy of a different kind. It's it's an alternative form of physical intimacy. Then obviously you have emotional intimacy. So right now we've spoken about physical intimacy that can be of different kinds. And then you have emotional intimacy. You can have all sorts of, you know, intimacy. You can have spiritual intimacy. You can have intellectual intimacy. It depends on what form of attraction fits you, and that's how I know it sounds very complex, but it's actually quite simple. We just need to break it down. You could experience all these forms of attraction, like for asexual people who experience, for example, aesthetic attraction or sensual attraction. They might not engage in sex, but they might engage in physical touch. Again, like then you have condition in the asexual spectrum. For example, you have conditions like you might experience sensual attraction, so you don't want your genitals to be engaged. You might want other body parts engaged in a sensual way, and then you can do it only with someone that you have feelings for. And this is very common, but nobody talks about it. Then you are called demisensual. So you experience sensual attraction. You only experience if there are emotions, and therefore you are demisensual, but you don't have sex.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that being super common, actually. And I can see it being really, really prevalent, because I feel like there is also kind of a lack of separation to an extent for most people between emotions and sexual well-being as well.
Yeah. But point is amatonormativity, or like the belief that sex and romance in a monogamous relationship should be something that we all pursue. It's been fed to us across movies, novels, etc., etc. So we forget that, okay, some people might not experience romantic attraction. Some people might experience only romantic attraction. So what happens there? Because physical intimacy is something that everyone needs, whether you are asexual or not. And when we talk about physical intimacy in terms of a need, is touch. If you don't get touched as a child, you can develop immunity problems. You don't need to have sex. Like, sex is not really a need, although it's called a need. It's not a need, but you can live without it. But you cannot live without touch.
I actually read something recently which was quite shocking, and I didn't really expect it. It was about the fact that, like, if you don't get touched like 12 times a day or something by people, it really impacts you. And I remember reading it and thinking, really? Like, does it? Do I? But no, you're absolutely right. Like, whether you're a child or whether you're an adult, like, obviously, when you're in your formative years, it really creates your functionality. But even when you're older as well, it is really important. I was going to ask though, like, when it comes to India, It's tricky. There's a lot of things that are very, very, you know, taboo there. So say, for example, you mentioned people are on dating apps, but it's still tricky to have them publicly. You would hide them. Why do you think people find it so difficult to talk about it, firstly? And secondly, how difficult has it been for you to develop your business in an environment where it is so conservative?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, what makes it difficult is a lot of segregation between, and I'm just going to use these terms like as they're used in mainstream media, etc., like man and woman. So men are brought up separate from women. So when you go for weddings, women sit on a side, men sit on the other side. And this is not, you know, it's not just with educated English speaking, you know, urban people, but across, right? So there are schools for, and I think in the UK it's the same thing. You have boys' schools and girls' schools. So you are separate. Unless you have siblings of the opposite gender, you will not be in touch with that gender almost across your life, because you might then end up doing the classic engineering and there's like lots of men, hardly any women. So you reach the workplace, and also depending on what industry you work in, you have no skills to speak to the opposite gender. You have no clue of what they are like, what they talk about. They're almost like alien to you. Then there is a lot of taboo and stigma around sex. That's globally. But in India, it's even more, because just relationships in general, or sex, is just seen as something either dirty, inappropriate, or something that it's not supposed to be done before marriage still. So what that means is that you should not be. The environment is very competitive. Schools are competitive. Colleges are competitive. It's a big country. There are a lot of people. Work environment is competitive. You cannot waste time falling in love. You cannot waste time in these silly things like, for example, sex, relationship, girls, boys. All of this is just a challenge or an obstruction for you to succeed. And not even at a, you know, I want to be very successful, at a basic level, like if I don't go to a good school or a decent school, or if I don't get a basic job, I won't be able to live, because, you know, you need money, etc. So it's a, there are multiple, obviously, factors here. And I'm not going to talk about religion, because that applies across the globe. Like, we know that the more religious the family, or the more religious the country or the community, etc., the more taboo around sex. So, and the more taboo, the more people want to do it, and therefore sex, I mean, sexual trauma or sexual abuse, etc., etc. So it's a bit of a vicious circle, but yeah, it's changing slowly. Now, with respect to the business, it's challenging. It's very difficult to reach out to women. Women don't want to talk about sex. Even when they talk about sex, it's often they come to me and my specific business, they will come to me with their husbands, because the husbands will bring them most of the time. A lot of women don't experience orgasms. A lot of women don't masturbate, so they don't even know what self-pleasure means, because they're not supposed to do it. It's a man's job to, it's a man's world, it's a man's sort of expertise to know what sex is or how it's done. And then when they get married and the husband has not had any sort of experience themselves, then both of them are lost because they don't know what to do. And while the usually most men will masturbate or discover self-pleasure through either porn or friends, women don't. So they just don't experience anything like at a physical level. They don't even think in terms of what would turn them on or what is erotic. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge to, when we run events, it's a challenge to find venues. It is a big challenge to find sponsors who can, you know, help us run these events. And obviously the events are not parties, although people think they are. There's always an educational element. We always teach consent before anyone turns up. There is a vetting process. So there's a lot of work that goes there. It's not just like throwing a party. And there are no brands who are willing to sponsor it. So other challenges, obviously, I mean, people ask, what is it that you do? How can you do it? Is it safe? All these sort of questions. You get a lot of harassment, people thinking that this is like a side sort of escort service where they can find either sex workers or women who are willing to have sex for casually with them. So there's a lot of that as well that one has to deal with. It's a bit of, they think it's an Ashley Madison support group or something.
I love that term, an Ashley Madison support group, which it is not, but it's just so funny. I remember when that scandal came out. But I actually think it's interesting. You've already just kind of touched on women and women having cultural barriers. How do you support that?
It's not easy because it's not easy if you are not willing to even explore your erotic self. You'll have to, like, the coaching would go through the route that makes sense to the person, and usually that route is romance and love. So how do you build physical pleasure and arousal and all of that based on romance, which is what most women feed on during their formative years, and that's what they visualize as being physical intimacy. Obviously, there's no genitals involved. So if I'm speaking to a 30 or 40 year old woman who's never touched herself and who's not willing to, how do we give her pleasure? So you have to go the sort of platonic route, cuddling, caresses, massages, and maybe that person will stay there. Because it's not easy after, like, if it's done through sex education when there are teenagers, or if there is at least one supporting person, or if they have friends who are supportive of physical pleasure, then something can shift later on as well. But if there's been nothing, starting from scratch is tough. Sometimes what happens, like, if the husband, because I'm speaking like from a mainstream point of view where everyone gets married. Most people will get married. Most people will get married into like two arranged marriages. So they might reach a point in life where they haven't experienced anything, and then the husband has an affair. This is a very classic sort of scenario. And then they start thinking like, okay, what do I do now? Like, if I leave him, then I start anew. So a lot of women in their 40s or 50s, when usually these splits happen, they start rediscovering themselves. So they're curious and they want to find out. And then you tell them, like, listen, if you want to experience an orgasm or any sort of physical pleasure, why don't you start masturbating? And then obviously you have toys and you suggest toys, and then slowly, slowly you can, you know, there are people who actually then rediscover themselves. And besides genitals, besides physical, just pleasure in general, like through maybe narratives, again, romance. Some people discover that they're kinky and they enjoy, you know, some form of worship. So that happens at a later stage, but it's not easy. People are at different points of discovery, and a lot of times women come with men and men kind of push them into a sexual space, and some people reject it, some people accept it, and they try out things. But yeah, it's tough. It's not easy.
Yeah, I can imagine so, especially when you're kind of put in a position where you might have to have an honest conversation about these topics with your partners as well. I assume that in itself must be probably the biggest barrier to overcome. Like, do people feel more comfortable, even if they've kind of come along to an experience like this with a partner, that they would prefer to have sessions on their own then?
Yeah, like it's so funny that we are okay talking about sex and intimacy and all of that with to a professional, but not with to the person that sleeps with us on the same bed every day. Yeah, so it's the stranger factor always helps people open up somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, you would think it's the other way around, but it's not.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I know a lot of things about people that their partners don't know.
But I guess that's like the first step in their process, kind of coming to you and then having them kind of open up about certain things and then kind of being brave to take that step in whatever direction they feel as well, which is really nice. So you kind of touched on kink, and the kink community is a community that you tend to work with a lot. I mean, that in of itself must have its own set of taboos as well. But what misconceptions do people have when they come to realize that that might be something they're interested in?
I don't think people understand that kink is very broad, and most of the time they would not identify themselves as kinky unless they're into pain or unless they're into multiple partner sex, like, for example, like threesomes or orgies, or unless they're into pain, so they love, or like they enjoy giving pain or receiving pain. So everything else is not really seen as kink, but it does fall under it. So when they start tiptoeing with the idea and they start realizing that, oh, there are so many activities that don't include pain, for example, that may just have role play or mild form of sensory play, or maybe a mild form of bondage, or just blindfolds, then they slowly start easing into this, and then obviously then it's gonna take them like years to discover everything. But yeah, I think like people are reluctant in becoming part of communities because there is still shame. They don't want people to know that they are also kinky. So a lot of people practice on their own, with their partners, or they might have like small, very private groups of people that they engage with. So the community is not really as vast as it would be anywhere else, because there is this constant sense like, okay, somebody will know me and then what? So there's still a lot of shame associated with kink.
Ah, that's interesting too. So it's kind of like touching on every aspect of your sexuality, whatever that might be, in a way as well, just because of being afraid to be discovered for wanting to have like your desires being opened up to individuals as well. But how about in younger consumers? Like, does that make a difference to them? Do you feel like they're a bit more open, or do they have kind of different ways of expressing themselves?
Definitely. I mean, kink now is trending. So there's a lot, like Gen Z is leading the way for sure. They're much more open about mentioning it on their dating profiles. They know the language, they know vocabulary. So you have like riggers and sadists and rope bunnies and brats and all the lingo used everywhere else. It's very common now, and it's trending. So younger people are exploring with it much more. I don't know how much education, but I around kink or like practicing safe kink. But there is a lot of information online around practices, and there are a lot of content creators abroad. The only sad thing is that there are not enough content creators or kink educators in India, because it is a different market, so things will work slightly differently here. But yeah, definitely younger people are taking the lead in this, in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And from your experience and what you've kind of noticed, because you do have events in a lot of different regions, how do things kind of vary region to region in terms of what people are interested in based off of your own data?
So I would say Gujarat has a lot of swingers. So a lot of people are into swinging, cuckolding, group sex. People in Kerala are into, a lot of them are into femdom. They are into sadomasochism a bit more, I feel. And this is based on like all inquiries and data that we have. And it's not really a lot of data in the sense. You can't really rap. But there are studies from sex toy brands as well, I think, on the what sells where. Kolkata is very kinky as well. Yeah, and then Bangalore is a city where a lot of people talk about it. There are small communities of polyamorous and kinky people. So they have meetups for everything. But again, I would say Bangalore also has like a big swinging community.
Wow. I think that's so interesting though, that it's like that based off of kind of what you found so far, that there are so many communities that are kind of coexisting in the same region, which is amazing to see. And I feel like that is hopefully going to open up more, like it is kind of over here in the UK for sure.
I would just love to know though, like obviously the younger generation is super, super different. And I was wondering if there is anything that you think that the industry overall can do to better support this younger consumer. I mean, of course, there's so many different trends to satisfy in terms of India anyway. I mean, from just those few regions that you mentioned, I mean, there was almost something completely different that trended or was valued more in that sense, in that area. So what about the younger future consumer? What do you think that we can do to help support them?
I think they need more experiences and, you know, real life experiences. They need more community support. They need spaces that are not so expensive, especially in cities. And they need a lot of parents who are not shaming them for expressing themselves. So I don't know how to fix that through the industry. But yeah, like the industry needs to develop in the sense that there needs to be jobs, there needs to be acceptance of professions like mine, for example, or sex educators, that go to schools and teach people, what is intimacy, what is sex, what are relationships, what are these emotions that young people experience when they're growing up, because nobody's doing that. So again, education for sure, products that are accessible, and spaces for them to express themselves.
Amazing. That sounds really, really good. Thank you so much.
In terms of your beauty hack that you personally have for like every day or special occasions, what would that be?
Definitely no alcohol, lots of water and supplements, and a lot of sleep. With products, I think hack is just at this age, and now that I'm 50, I think the only hack is like fillers and Botox and HIFU and Profhilo, all of the injectables.
So I actually have a question for you about that, just because that is genuinely an area that we dabble in as well when it comes to injectables and things like that. Like for people in their kind of, because you look amazing, by the way, but in terms of people like in their like 30s and 40s before they kind of get to 50 and to look as amazing as you, how would you kind of stagger those treatments and supplements?
To be honest, I wish I had started a little earlier.
It's just with what specifically? Like, if you had to do it again, what would you start with first? And how would you upgrade as the years went on?
I think I would start with your HIFU and your Profhilo and just like hyaluronic substances of various forms injected. I would start with that and with Botox. And then at the end, like use fillers whenever. I mean, you reach a point where your face is falling.
But you do look amazing. I mean, when you said now that I'm 50, I was like, what? And we've spent a good amount of time together, but I would never say you're 50. So whatever you've done has worked. But yeah, I do think Profhilo is an interesting one.
Yeah, it's painful. I mean, but I found HIFU even more painful, to be honest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. No, yeah. I love this convo, honestly. I think it's really useful as well. Just to, like, know how, you know, whatever you feel you can do to make yourself better. But obviously, like, we've all tried a lot of things. Do you have like a beauty regret in terms of like treatments or anything that you've done that you've thought, oh my goodness, I never want to do this again because it didn't work for you?
Yeah. Fat freezing. That was the worst thing I ever did. It didn't work. Like I didn't realize I was going to just remove a chunk of fat. But then, you know, it depends on what age you do it, I guess. So I'm not really sure it works as a product. Like you freeze and then like you get bumps all over, so then it's pointless. Now I'm like left with bumps and I don't know what to do with them.
Oh my gosh,
wow, that's intense. Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing with a lot of these treatments, like some of them are tested, but they're tested on like a very, very limited basis, so then when it comes time to doing it, like they never really explain properly, like, okay, it is exactly going to freeze the fat, but it's going to do it like molecule by molecule.
Yeah. But I mean, the people obviously selling it will try and sell it to you as a treatment, right?
Of course.
So there was this one woman, I think in New York, and she's called the beauty broker. And she is someone who tells you like what she looks at you like, whatever, your body face, and then she tells you these are the treatments that you should get, you know, you should do. And that's her like business model. She just consults on what treatments you should do. So I wish there were more people like that who are affordable, because she's like not so affordable, who tell you like not from a product point of view, but just generally like, okay, if you're this age and if this is your skin, etc., then you should go for these products. I think it's more reliable than a doctor or a practitioner that is trying to sell you something.
100%. And actually makes so much sense, because you're already kind of like going in there and they're just looking at you and objectively being like, this is what you could do. But I guess because they're not necessarily directly selling it to you, there's a little bit more of a trust factor there as well.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, no, thank you so much for these wonderful words of wisdom on beauty and for talking to us about your business. We had so much fun with you, and we can't wait for everyone to hear about this.
Thank you for having me.
Perfect. All right, guys. See you in a bit.